All right, how many of you have been using HTTP today? Okay, quite a few. How many of you have been using HTTPS today? Okay, many more. So amongst those who have been using HTTP, did you want to use it or did you have to use HTTP? Okay, so not too many people who have to use HTTP despite wanting to use encryption. That's interesting. Well, Jonah over here seems to feel that this problem is more urgent than it looks like in this crowd. So he's going to talk to us about moving towards a fully encrypted web. So please, all welcome him with a fine applause, Jonah.
Is the mic on? Yeah. So, welcome to my talk about the web encryption, where we are today, how we got here, and what is about to happen in the web PKI. So, who am I? My name is Juno. I have been working in backend development and system administration for 15 years. For the last 2 years, I have been also contributing to CertBot projects and will be working full-time on CertBot starting next month. So, what's up? Why am I standing here today? Web encryption. Pretty much everybody knows something about it, at least. So let's travel a few years back. Not only the technical people, expect a certain level of privacy in all the digital communications today. It's like, be it instant messaging, email, phone calls, whatever. Of course, that's not true always, but that's what we expect. We expect the communication to be private at a certain level, at least. So, for most services today, we're in pretty good situation. Instant messaging is pretty much, well, at least most of it is encrypted, at least on some level. Phone calls and email somewhat. We can actually thank Google and blame Google at the same time about the email stuff, because they have taken so large chunk of email traffic that they're forcing people to use start TLS and other like authenticity texts like DKIM and so on. And Apple, they are forcing applications that they distribute through the App Store to use HTTPS only for the API communications. But our beloved web, that's something that we have somewhat settled upon, like HTTP. This is just this like web stuff. It's plain old HTTP. It's all fine, and we don't think more about it. Well, sometimes back at least. It's like, we're not a bank, so Telnet is fine for remote administration, right? Said no system administrator in the last 20 years. But the web hasn't received the same like level of, hasn't reached that level for some reason yet. So SSL, TLS, it's nothing new. It's actually 22 years old. Tech that was introduced by Netscape back in 1995 has gone through many iterations. SSL 1.0 that never got public because of the security flaws. There was SSL 2.0 and 3.0, and after that TLS 1.0 in 99, that was based on SSL 3 and could actually downgrade the connections to SSL 3. Then we have had TLS 1.1 in 2006 and TLS 1.2 2008, and we are in process of moving towards TLS 1.3, which is currently at the draft state at IETF. So we have had this tech for 20 years plus. So why am I standing here today talking about web encryption and the adoption of web encryption today? Well, it has been pricey, painful, and the whole process has been like a hard, and people tend to skip the hard, not completely required stuff, because yeah, not completely required. So people tend to skip it when not absolutely necessary. So the configuration has been tedious. The acquiring the certificates, they require you to hop through many loops to actually acquire a signed certificate from CA. But today, we are in a bit different world. This is the state we are currently. Statistics collected from Firefox telemetry show that actually, I think last week we peaked 60% of the requests made by Firefox peaked 60%. And this doesn't look so impressive, the graph itself, but note the scale, if you can see it. It's like a scale is 2 years, and in that time, the amount of encrypted requests over the web has grown 50%. Like a, that's huge. Because after all, it's a 20-year-old old tech. So, what has happened? Why are we moving more rapidly today? So, deploying HTTPS has got a lot more accessible. You don't necessarily need the like a technical knowledge of all of the stuff. We have client tools that actually acquire the certificate, get it signed, and do the configuration on your server software for you with decent defaults, at least. There has also been pressure from browser vendors. Google, Mozilla, I'm not sure if Apple does it, but at least those show the users' warnings currently on a sites that are plain HTTP and have like login forms or payment forms of a kind. Browsers are also limiting the media APIs to secure origins. Media APIs mean like microphone access, webcam access. So that drives the developers to actually bring the HTTPS in from the get-go. So let's encrypt, removing financial constraints, ACME protocol behind it, helping with automation, the clients doing the configuration, at least some, and browser vendors forcing people to move towards HTTPS by end user questions and requests. When end user sees on a login page, sees not secure, they're prone to ask, why is this? So, about the actors here. Let's Encrypt. You are most likely familiar with Let's Encrypt. So it's a project by Internet Security Research Group. Gives you short-lived certificates for 90 days because of the problems with revocation and so on. This is a good thing, short-lived certificates. Only domain-validated certificates. There are no extended validation certificates or organization validation. And the whole purpose is just to get the web encrypted. Nothing more. So there are some limits in place in a way that you can't request 2,000 certificates from one machine at the, like in a short time frame. But the limits are high enough that nobody actually should hit them. And if you have a legit reason, you need like a more bandwidth, you know, in a sense, there are like a system for exceptions for a large ISPs and so on. So, the importance of transparency and automation. This acts as a prelude to talking about the ACME, the protocol behind this. So, why do the automation and openness actually matter? What's wrong with the old ways of doing stuff? The major CAs that have been around for a long time, they have their own process. They are audited like regularly, I think once a year, once per 2 years or so, by like third parties. So what's wrong with that? CA browser forum requires the audits. So what could go wrong? Part one, 404. GoDaddy was handling the domain validation for certificates by software bug that was in place for half a year. They picked the validation string from any part of the response body, which meant that if the web server was configured in a way that showed the URI in the 404 page, pretty much anyone could get a certificate signed for that domain. That's pretty bad. They had almost 9,000 certificates revoked as a precautionary measure because those were potentially misissued. And this is an example of a validation that would be actually valid if my valid token there was the actual validation token. And whoever requested for this domain, a certificate for this domain would have the certificate signed and issued. So this was GoDaddy, so of course it's fixed and life goes on. So what could go wrong? Part two, OCR. EU, BE, and AT domains, they didn't don't provide the admin email address in the Whois information. Instead, they have this image on the web Whois search. And some CAs use email as a validation channel for domains. So they pretty much they pick the admin email from Whois response and send a validation email to that address, and yeah, after a few steps, the certificates get signed because the whoever requested it is able to prove that they own the domain. But yeah, these domains don't provide the admin email in Whois response. So Komodo was doing automation. they used OCR to dig the actual textual address from the image. What could go wrong, right? So there is this large ISP in Austria called A1 Telecom, and researchers Florian Heinz and Martin Kluge were able to actually, they registered a domain AL Telecom and requested a certificate for A1Telecom.at, and the Komodo OCR picked interpreted the A1 Telecom domain in the Whois image as an AL Telecom, and they got the certificate signed. And it's a pretty big thing because this is large ISP, right? So yeah. So what could go wrong, part three? Symantec had this registration authority program, which meant that the third-party companies could like use their infrastructure to issue certificates for the customers. And they were issued using the Symantec infrastructure. So that's not an actual problem, but the responsibility, it's still Symantec's, and they weren't policing their registration authority program members that well. So they have to answer for their mistakes in a way. So there was this Korean company that signed like a lot of certificates, like a test certificate for Google.com and things like that. So some small stuff, and they like didn't abide the rules of CAB in a sense of the ownership information in the certificate and so on. So potentially 30,000 certificates were affected. But there's this slight problem, because Symantec, it's too big to fail, or at least was. 2015, they had 30% of the certificates in the wild were issued by Symantec. So you can't like you break way too many things if you distrust the whole CA. So instead, Google took a step that they will like lower the allowed expiration time for Symantec certificates every Chrome release. So it's going to go down to 9 months, I think. That will be the maximum. And I think they also revoked the, disallowed the Symantec to use the EV certificates completely. So that's not all with Symantec. Just like a few weeks ago, Hanoverk registered two test domains and got certificates from them for them from Symantec. He actually also got certificates from Komodo. Komodo didn't file for this. So after that, he created like a false, fake private keys and posted them to Pastebin, and reported to the CA that his private keys for these domains or these certificates have been compromised and posted online. So I would need to revoke the certificates, please. Well, of course, those private keys weren't like the real ones, and he wanted to see if the CAs would actually validate the authenticity of the cryptographical authenticity of the private keys before actually revoking them. So Symantec revoked the certificates, and they tried to hide the reason that they were, or did not answer directly why the certificate was revoked when he contacted them in a role of the original certificate owner and private key owner, asking why it got revoked, because the private key is not in the wild, and they didn't actually have the right reasons, of course, to revoke it. So be sure to check Hanno's talk. I think he's talking tonight about fuzzing here at SHA as well. So, yeah. Did you notice there was these examples had three CAs: Komodo, Symantec, and GoDaddy. These are actually the biggest commercial CAs out there, and all of this has happened during the last 2 years. And I think that's a good reasoning why we need openness and automation. These are all human errors, in a way, or errors in the process. And these, of course, all of these companies have been audited by the third parties, so it should be okay, right? So, there's one more. What could go wrong, part four: Startcom and WooSign. So Startcom was a pretty nice CA. They handed out pre-certificates for, have been doing that for a long time. But they actually got acquired by WooSign, and they didn't disclose. They tried to hide the fact that they were actually bought by WooSign, a Chinese CA. And that's a whole different story, but they had few technical flaws as well. So they allowed the use of any port for a domain validation, which in reality means that in a shared hosting environment, any unprivileged user who is still able to open the sockets on a unprivileged ports over 1024 were actually able to validate any domain that pointed to the IP address of the shared hosting server in question. So, yeah. Also, they failed the validation of SNI certificates. So, if your certificate request had multiple domains in it, they would validate only the first one. And this actually resulted in Stephen Schroger getting a certificate for github.com because he was using the first domain was the old style of GitHub pages, a domain, his username .github.com. And that was the only one that was validated, even though the certificate request had github.com main domain as well. He also got a certificate for his university's main domain, the same way. So yeah, you were able to actually add, after the validation, you were able to add new domains to the certificate request after the validation as well. Pretty bad. And they issued backdated SHA-1 certificates after the period when no CAs were allowed to issue SH1 certificates for obvious reasons. SH1 is broken. So, yeah. But the automation, that would fix all of these problems if done correctly. ACME protocol is answer to that problem. So ACME stands for Automated Certificate Management Environment. It's currently in draft phase at IETF in 7th iteration. Will be RFC at some time. talks signed JSON over HTTPS with the CA. Has a lot of features that would be needed by you could be like a commercial CA and use Acme automation. It has everything the commercial CA would need as well. So Acme has different kinds, different ways to validate your ownership of the domain. Domain validation. You can like the HTTP validation means that you will place a resource in your web root for the CA to request, and if they get the right expected token, they have confirmed your ownership of the domain. TLS SNI, which means you will create a self-signed certificate with the validation token, the CA will do the same thing, resolve the DNS, connect to the IP address of your domain. It's Let's Encrypt this prioritizing IPv6, by the way. So A record first, and if not found, A record, and so on. Currently, Let's Encrypt is still doing like this from one endpoint. So, it's moving toward like using multiple request endpoints to avoid problems with DNS poisoning and so on. So TLS SNI, and then there's DNS validation, which basically is just like adding TXT record with a validation token to your zones, DNS zones record with like a magic subdomain underscore acme dash challenge dot your actual token dot tld, your actual domain dot tld. And there's out of band challenge as well, which is not used by Let's Encrypt, that, and it's more like a manual process. So there are many client implementations using Acme to request and get certificates from Let's Encrypt, which is the only CA currently using Acme. And there are a lot of clients that are really good. Then there is few awesome complete integrations, which means eventually we of course want to have the HTTPD handling the whole HTTPS thing from the get-go. You will just tell what domains you want to serve to the users, and the HTTPD would handle that. There's Caddy, which does this already. It's really good HTTPD written in Go by Matt Holt, and of course, because open source project, a lot of contributors as well. And it does HTTPS as default. The configuration is super simple as well. Then there is this new project, which is not still not production ready, but it's like moving fast. Apache ModMD that will do the same thing somewhat. You will have to add like a new configuration parameter, but that's all. And that's where we actually want to be at some point. Every HTTPD handling this for the user. So there's really no reason for deep technological knowledge of inner workings of TLS and requesting certificates. That's something that should just work. Users or administrators should not like need to worry about this in today. I'm going to talk about a bit about CertBot. Because that's the one client that I'm most familiar with. It's an Acme client by EFF, and does the same thing as the other clients, of course, creates the certificates and gets it signed by the Let's Encrypt CA. But I think that's the only client with more advanced HTTPS configuration management as well. So it will additionally, if you want, it will configure your server for you. Currently, it's working for Apache and Nginx, but there are developments ongoing that it won't only configure your HTTPDs, but other server software as well, like email and so on. And it gives the users like a sane configuration defaults. Not, of course, perfect, but it's always a struggle between backward compatibility and the security in this domain. So yeah, of course, nothing goes without issues. We are moving rapidly towards the fully encrypted web, but there are, of course, still issues. I think the main one is lack of HSTS header. This pretty much means that upon the first request, if your domain is not on the HSTS preload list of the user agents, it will upon the first request, it will tell the browser to only communicate with me using HTTPS for a time period. That's also in the header. If it's not there, downgrade attacks are possible. In a sense, you might know SSL strip, which actually gives the man-in-the-middle attacker possibility to hand only unencrypted requests to the actual client, and it uses, if needed, it uses HTTPS communicating with the actual server, so doesn't break compatibility. So a bit about HSTS. It's cached value in the browser. So there are many situations that it could actually break your existing site if you're migrating from HTTP to HTTPS. And this is also one of the reasons why it has not been widely deployed yet, and you can't just tell people just add the HSTS header to your web server configuration, because that could potentially brick your site for whatever time you set the max age to be. So yeah, this is the demonstration of effectiveness of bad HSTS deployments. You know, it's effective, but things can go horribly wrong, you know. So that's why we can't recommend it for everybody. Good intentions. Yeah. Okay. Another issue today is broken replication. It's completely broken. Revocation lists are not used because browser vendors value UX over security. They cut amount of requests this way when the user agent doesn't have to check every domain. They use CRL sets. Google uses CRL sets and Firefox, can't remember actually the name for but Mozilla has a similar thing in place. It's basically a list of high priority domains that have had their certificate revoked. So if you're not like a big player and your certificate or your private keys get compromised and you revoke your certificate, the browsers will most likely be happy to serve the revoked certificate and not like a make it work just like a yeah. So we have a tech in place. There's a certificate extension called OCSP must stable. That would make the HTTPD itself to get signed timestamps by the OCSP server. So when they send the certificate for the client, the client can verify that it has a recent enough timestamp. So that pretty much handles the, or at least shortens the impact of broken revocation. But the server implementations are somewhat bad because the HTTPDs usually work as like a event based. When the client makes the connection, that's the only point when the server checks the must stable timestamp, and that's if it's recent enough, and if it's not, it would then proceed and try to get it signed again. So this results in the end user to have like a longer round trip times. The response could take a long time. If there's some issues in the connection between the HTTPD server and the OCSP server, that would result in a brick site, so completely unusable for the client until the server gets the connection and gets a new signed timestamp. So yeah, the future, where are we heading? I already talked about TLS 1.3, that's going to be good, but there's more. The browser vendors are going to pressure the administrators through the end users even more. This image shows the current state and the state after Chrome 62 gets released, how it's going to look. So currently they are only using the showing the not secure notification if your site has a login form or a credit card form, payment form of a kind. But they will be, after Chrome 62, they will be showing the not secure on every site that has form, any kind of form. So that's good. And not secure notification for every site that's HTTP. If you're running in incognito mode, you can actually turn the incognito mode like behavior on today by going to Chrome / flags, and there's an option called mark non-secure origins as non-secure. So yeah, there's still more. There are some new requirements by CAB, CA/browser forum. The CAs are forced to respect the CAA header starting next month. CAA record from the DNS. CAA record will allow the DNS administrator to actually, or the domain owner to actually restrict the CAs that are allowed to issue certificate for this domain. So you could like restrict the issuers to whatever CA you like. Then there will be certificate transparency requirements for all certificates that get signed after April 2018. This is good. Certificate transparency is awesome. So it will actually be in user agents as well as an option. User agent can check the certificate if it has the signed certificate timestamp and require that one. You can try this soon-ish. Chrome is going to, Google is going to ship Chrome version. Don't know actually which version, but with which version. But it will give the administrators ability to add a new HTTP header called expect CT, and that will tell the user agent to actually check the SCT header in the SCT record in the certificate. There are going to be wildcard certificates issued by Let's Encrypt starting January 2018. So in half a year, we are able to get wildcard certificates from Let's Encrypt. Domain validated certificates are good and better for obvious reasons, but there are still, of course, there are still use cases where you need the wildcard certificates. Wildcard certificates will be able to you will be able to request wildcard certificates only by using the DNS challenge, and that's because if you use HTTP challenge for wildcard certificate, that would mean that you could like just by validating some random domain, you could like claim ownership over every like a subdomain that could be like managed by some other entities. So only DNS challenge for that. DNS challenge is pretty good, but combined with automation, it has some like downsides as well. If you want to automate DNS challenges, that would mean you would need to use a DNS server that has an API. And second, you would have to store the API keys on your box. So if any of your boxes that need or use DNS challenges gets compromised, that means that your whole DNS zone gets compromised, in a sense. And that could possibly mean like using your whole digital identity as well as whoever has your DNS zone could like pick up your email. Every email sent to that domain by changing the MX records and so on. So it's pretty bad, something to avoid. But luckily, Acme and Let's Encrypt, Acme doesn't mandate that, but Let's Encrypt follows CNAMEs. So this means that you could actually use like some throwaway domain for the DNS validation by pointing the CNAMEs to that throwaway domain. Of course, you most likely won't be registering two domains for every actual domain you want to use. So it will, this way, if you use one like a central throwaway domain for validation, that could result in like a many or could result in a compromise of certificates, or the attacker could like request certificates for every domain that points to that throwaway domain. So some 10 months ago, I created a small piece of software that's called Acme DNS. It's a simplified DNS server, acts as subdelegates, DNS, and it restricts the updates done via its API to only TXT records. And the way you would use it would be first creating a account, which is done by a HTTPS like a post request. It generates a random subdomain. It generates a random username, random password. There are no like a password reset options or anything like that. So if you lose your credentials for reason or another, just get a new one. But yeah, so you get your unique subdomain that you will point your actual domains, like a magic Acme Challenge subdomain, to. And yeah, it has a few like features that elevate the level of security a bit. You can like define IP ranges that are able to do the update requests for this subdomain and so on. It's written in Go. Yeah, and yeah, it's for many DNS servers. You would need to wait for the actual update to propagate through the secondary name servers and so on. But this one has a TCL of 1 second, so it's always fresh in a way, and it's only one instance anyway. I'll show you a short video about the inner workings of this. If you can see it, I don't know. It's a bit small. No, you can't see it. I won't show it. Yeah, it shows the functionality, just like getting the account. So from the server, you get the subdomain and your credentials, and you're able to point the CNAME to them and use the credentials with the HTTP API to do the actual like TXT record updates. It would look if you use CertBot to do the updating, it's actually pretty simple script that you would need to run using the CertBot manual mode. And this is example of such script here. It's pretty much just one post request to whatever. You will of course need to self-host the Acme DNS subdelegate DNS software, because you wouldn't like want to give the authority of signing or requesting your domain certificates for a third party. But this is good for like a bit larger infrastructures. It's pretty much just like one post request here with the data that's needed. So yeah. I think that's pretty much it.
All right then. Thank you very much for your talk, Jonah. And we still have time for a few questions. If you please line up before the microphones. And we have a first question at the first microphone.
Does this work? Yeah. So does Acme DNS...
Sorry.
Please get a little closer to the microphone.
Is this better? This is better. Does Acme DNS support DNSSEC?
No.
Oh, that's a bummer.
And it's a subdelegate DNS anyway. It's just like
Okay. And the other one is, I see you've listed Boulder. Is that the server component for Acme, or?
Sorry.
You've listed Boulder.
Yeah.
That's the server part of Acme.
Yes. Yeah. And it's all open here. It's written in Go as well. So.
Cool. Yep. Yeah. Thank you.
Any other questions? Don't be shy.
Or actually, to answer your question about ACMA DNS, it does support the DNSSEC because you are able to create, you're able to define in the configuration in-memory DNS records that they don't have any kind of update API, but you're able to define them like a one shot.
So what is the future in the field of CA business? So Let's Encrypt will be the largest one, and what is like the space left to other CAs, because you are doing everything better than them and better work than them, and you are giving it for free. So it looks like you are winning the whole business. Let's Encrypt will be the largest and easiest to use.
Yeah, that's actually a good question. I don't know answer to, but the CAs will have to renew themselves in a way. It's like if the business model is broken, what can you do?
Great work.
Okay, question related to that one. So, like, if Let's Encrypt becomes sort of too big to fail, but that could happen, but like, are you? Is anyone else thinking about using the same infrastructure to have a like similar CA, but with like different trust route?
Yeah, of course not the same infrastructure, but the same ACME and so
like
on.
Like reusing everything.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, there was an initiative by Startcom. Before they got distrusted, they they released this client software and automation system called Start Encrypt, which had most of these horrible problems as well that they had. And when they got a lot of backlash, they actually announced that they are going to move to ACME. But, well, rest is history. They, yeah.
Thanks.
Now they're distrusted, not because of the announcement, but yeah. Yeah, thanks. So yeah, thank you.
Okay, then please, one more applause. Thank you, Jonah.